What's up, everybody? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Life After High School, the number one resource podcast in the entire world. I wouldn't say this to you guys if it was not purely factual. Brought to you by me, Glenn YG. I am your host and the man behind the microphone. Each week, we look to drop a new episode, so make sure you guys subscribe on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to also follow the podcast on social media at Life After High School 1. We've got a killer episode for you guys this week, so without further ado, let's dive right into it. Cue that intro, baby.
It's the Life After High School podcast.
Awesome. So, Carrie, first and foremost, I know you're a busy gal, so I really appreciate your time and you hanging out with us today. So I'll get right to it. Take us through kind of your, I usually start these things by asking the guest a bit about like their transition, leaving post-secondary and stuff like that. Just kind of understanding what decisions may cause them to think and make the decisions to deciding where to go to school and stuff like that or what to pursue. But I'd like to back it up a bit further for you. So you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're first immigration, first generation Chinese, correct?
So I've always been a bit confused by this because there isn't really like a set definition. I used to call myself first generation because I was the first generation to be born in Canada. Mm. But I recently found out I think I'm actually second generation because my parents immigrated here and then they had me. So I would be the second generation.
Oh, is that how that works?
It's a very confusing concept. I'm still not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure I'm a second generation immigrant. My parents are from China. They immigrated here. They had me. And then we bounced around a bit, but I grew up mostly in Northern Ontario.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering about that, like where you primarily grew up. Like it was, yeah, and you said Northern Ontario, Sudbury, I guess would be.
Yeah, so I was born in Saskatoon. I think we only stayed for about a year and then I actually grew up in the Bay, so really up north.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Sudbury Middle School. So I moved around a little bit, but both places in Northern Ontario have been really nice.
Nice. Okay. So upon moving to Sudbury and stuff like that, you were how old when you got here?
I would have been in seventh grade. So I'd say like
younger.
In my teen, 12, 13 maybe.
Okay, sweet. So with that, going into high school and stuff like that, did you always have an idea? Like you're studying, what are you studying right now in university? We went through it already, but I'm going to butcher it again. So,
yeah, for sure. I'm studying health sciences. It's pretty similar to every other like health program you might hear about. Yeah. But here we call it health sciences.
Okay, sweet. So what direction are you looking to use that for? Like where is that going to take you? Like what's the vision?
You know, that's the question of the year. It's something I ask myself all the time. I think growing up as a kid, I really wanted to be a doctor, probably a little bit because my parents wanted me to be a doctor. And, you know, it's a very like cultural thing. It's a stable job. You're servicing a community.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great like people in the community value doctors and healthcare workers. But I think growing up, I also really just like the idea of being able to like be in my community and help others. And the doctor sort of played into a lot of those things that I would want to do with a career.
Right.
I think that concept of like being a doctor really wavered during the pandemic when you sort of saw like the systemic issues.
Mm-hmm.
And also just with, you know, like I started exploring different career options. I liked being like, you know, an advocate. I liked being in like the political world. There are other things that I found out that I liked other than science and healthcare. So I remember in grade 11 and 12, I really had like that career crisis. I was always the person who really knew what I was going to do. I was like, I'm going to be a neurosurgeon or I'm going to be a cardiothoracic surgeon when I was 10 years old. And then suddenly I had no idea what I wanted to do during a time when I had to apply to university and everyone else was figuring out what they wanted. And I completely lost my sense of, you know, what am I signing myself up for? And I think that sort of that decision I really struggled with, but the way I worked through it was I considered the things I was interested in and I ended up picking a program in health sciences because I figured my program doesn't really dictate what I do with my life after my degree. It doesn't dictate what I do with my life during my degree. So while I'm in class, I'm learning about, you know, anatomy and different health topics. The time I use outside of class is normally for like going out in my community, advocating for students, exploring what different careers might be out there. And I think that's a concept that a lot of youth struggle with when it comes to applying to universities is that you're not signing yourself up for anything permanent. You're just exploring something that you're interested in that you could see yourself maybe working in the future. And you're really just signing yourself up for another 4 years to explore different areas that you would like. You know, you could be in an engineering program and exploring things that like a nurse might do by volunteering at a hospital. So there really isn't any like not
Interesting.
finding yourself for anything lifelong or permanent.
Interesting. That's a cool approach you have to it. I'd like to, before we jump forward to your community involvement, stuff like that, how did you know that your parents were, and I'm not going to use the word force, but maybe shaping the decision as a doctor and stuff like that? Like, was there signs, or was it? I don't want to paint like in any type of picture, but I'm just very, very curious. Like, were like, did they say certain things that made you think that that's what they wanted? Was it like an expectation, or?
Absolutely. My parents are definitely like probably one of the most supportive people I know. They weren't pushing or forcing in any way.
Nice. Yeah.
Just in Asian culture, you know, probably away from my parents, it's sort of highly regarded. Not just in Asian culture, I think a lot of immigrant cultures sort of
Yeah.
they value careers that are very stable and valued in the community. Because obviously my parents' experience being like immigrants, nothing's really stable while you're immigrating from one country to another all the way across the world. And having to sort of build up that stability with like financial security as well as career stability, that's something that they went through and they know very well. And that's something that they don't really want to pass down to myself and my sister. Just knowing how
Smart.
hard it is to, you know, leave, go across the country, leave your family behind, have to build something up from scratch. I feel like they've already built us up halfway and we're not starting from scratch anymore. So there isn't really a reason for us to sign up for a life of instability. I think that's sort of the thought process for them. They never really forced it on us. I sort of had like an interest to begin with healthcare, and they really played into that interest with, oh, these are some things that you can do to explore science, to explore healthcare. I did science fair as a kid, starting in fifth grade all the way up to when I graduated high school. It's probably one of the nerdiest things I did, but I loved it. So they really fostered like that appreciation for science and healthcare.
Interesting.
But it was never forcing. I mean, my older sister, who's 5 years older, she went into investment banking, which is like probably the farthest thing you can find from healthcare.
Yeah.
And it's something that my parents also really pursued for her, because as soon as they see that we have an interest in something, they just try to foster in a way that'll help us grow, but never pushing us in a direction
Oh,
we don't already want to.
that's cool. So they kind of can nurture the influence in that regard. It's not like, hey, we think this is what's best for you. It's like, oh, we see you taking an interest in this. We're gonna guide it in the way we know how, or
Yeah,
what's best. So
absolutely.
interesting. That's really cool. Wow. And that's a really good approach they took. I really like that a lot. That kind of, yeah, for sure. That helps, I can imagine, with, I guess, taking stress off and knowing that you can try whatever you want or have these interests, and you're not gonna like go against anything. It's like, you know, they'll
Yeah,
just be there to support.
absolutely.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm very fortunate of you to have that. But shifting gears a bit to back to what I'd like to talk about in terms of involvement in the community and stuff like that, and the organizations. What do you participate in and organize? I know you just mentioned like a council meeting or something along those lines before we got on here. What's the involvement look like?
I mean, starting from back home, I guess in Sudbury, because I did go to high school and part of middle school in Sudbury. I really dug into my roots. I feel like that's when I did a lot of self-growth and exploration. And I do think of Sudbury as home, or Northern Ontario more broadly, I guess. But in my time in Sudbury, I explored a lot of what it was like to be a BIPOC person or Black, Indigenous, or person of color growing up in an area where there's not as much diversity as there is here in Southern Ontario. So a lot of the things that we struggle with are like the lack of representation in our education. So like when we're reading books in elementary school, watching a movie, we don't always see ourselves represented. And that makes it hard to, you know,
Interesting.
connect with our peers. It's also hard to imagine yourself in a career if you've never seen yourself represented in a career. That was a challenge I really wanted to tackle. I started working with this organization called Future North, which is in Sudbury. A really great organization for youth, which is defined as 15 to 30. They're also running out of funding soon. So if anyone's listening, I'm
Yeah,
just going to
please.
put a quick plug. You know, you can donate to Future and keep it running for the youth in our community. But we worked on a project and it was basically getting some funding, about $70,000, to tackle the challenges that we identified for BIPOC students. So we created a couple of BIPOC libraries in schools. We funded different students to create art projects that are rooted in cultural activity. We also had the summer art pop-up, So that allowed students to come to the Youth Wellness Hub, as well as some other areas in Sudbury, to engage in cultural art workshops. So basically, we did a lot of things, some research to begin with. We talked to youth what the problems were in the community, and then we used that money to sort of challenge what the challenges were, and connect with more BIPOC youth so that they feel empowered. And that's sort of been ongoing since then. You know, I had sort of a hands-off approach after I graduated, because obviously I was moving cities, but Future North really took it and ran with it. Which I'm super grateful to see. And a lot of sub projects came out of it, like the Hope campaign. And now I feel like I'm rambling because Future North does so many great things. But that was something that I'm really proud of when I think of, you know, going back home to Sudbury, still connecting with the Future North team and just seeing all the things that they're doing.
So you mentioned the example, or I'd like an example of some of them that you mentioned, that they were like BIPOC youth might be struggling with in the community. You mentioned that when you were discussing and doing workshops there, that people would give you examples. Yeah. Do you have any that stood out or things like that that you'd be all right with sharing?
I mean, there's some clear ones, like the lack of representation I talked about, but the one that really stands out to me is we had done one focus group where we had a couple of youth come onto Zoom because it was during pandemic times. And we'd ask them, like, you know, what are the biggest struggles that you face as a BIPOC youth growing up in Sudbury? And someone had shared with us that, you know, like, one of the biggest struggles is that no one really talks about what the struggles are. You know, just having that conversation is one of the biggest things, because there aren't really any spaces for BIPOC youth to go if they want to start, you know, making change, if they want to just see who else is having the same experience. And that one participant actually came onto the project afterwards and got more involved with Future North. But it's just hearing that, you know, we're at the point so early in like a project like this to hear, you know, the problem is that we're not talking about it. And that's probably like a really big problem to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think that's, I was finding in regards to the topic of men and mental health, I was talking with a couple of friends of mine about that a few weeks ago. And that is the problem, is that nobody's doing that. It's like, if we can just start with having the conversation about these topics, and then eventually it'll grow into something that is like a Future North or other organizations like that, that are able to kind of fund the cause and create events that allow people to get connected and have those resources together in the city and community and stuff like that, which is phenomenal. But I think what I want to know about that, because as I've done a bit of research and stuff, I've noticed there are people that have almost a stigma around being somebody who is Black, Indigenous, or person of color, stuff like that. Have you ever experienced, like, been on the receiving end of the stigma? Like, people have shied away from you because of it or stuff like that, or you've not received certain resources and stuff like that because of it? Like, I'm curious, even if not you, that you'd be like willing to share of somebody you do know.
I think stigma is like, it presents itself uniquely to different groups. So I really like the example you use with men's mental health. I think the stigma is that like everyone is doing fine, so no one's going to talk about it. And that's when you start hearing, when you gather a group of people and you hear that you're all having the same challenges, that's when you start dismantling the stigma and you start realizing what the reality is. And that exists in, you know, all marginalized groups. I think one of the stigmas for me personally, and for a lot of cultural groups, is that from outside perspective, we present as if everything is going well. You know, a lot of students succeed very well academically in school, a lot of BIPOC students, because of either like family environment or just, you know, just being like a student and wanting to succeed. And that makes it seem like in other factors of life, nothing else is going wrong. So it's like the facade of success shadows everything else that could be going wrong because of BIPOC challenges. So some of the stigma is that, like, you know, you do have it so well, so any identity struggles you have probably aren't all that important, because, you know, when you're in school, you do well, you get good grades, you have a great family life. And all of that should add up to nothing being wrong. And that creates a lot of stigma because it discourages students to connect with each other and learn about what each other's challenges are, in short of sharing that lived experience. But on the other end, a lot of stigma that happens within Asian communities is that we're not really encouraged to be advocates. I mentioned that my parents were immigrants, and the story that they always tell is that they survive and that they grow their career by having their head down low and just working hard. And that's the mentality that they want their kids to also adopt, you know, just go with the flow, keep your head down and get things done. I think the difference between my parents' generation and my generation is that they were trying to survive, you know, moving to a new country.
Yeah.
And for us,
different, you know, in China.
Yeah, we're trying to do a little bit more than survive now. We want to feel respected. We want to feel safe. We want the same rights as everyone else. And that sort of attitude forces us into roles of advocates, which scares our parents a little bit, because putting yourself out there is always putting yourself at risk.
Right.
And it is a big responsibility to carry other people's voices and stories as well. So there's some stigma there, like within culture, stigma isn't always perpetuated by the same people.
No.
And there's a lot of different types of stigma that you have to manage. I can only speak from my own lived experience, but even you just shared, like, everyone faces some sort of stigma in some way. And I think having those conversations is the best starting point, because just realizing you're not alone is important.
Oh, it's huge. It allows you to connect with the people that are a part of the group. And then you're able to almost, your voice becomes so much more convincing and so much stronger and so much more powerful. And it carries a lot more weight when there's more people behind it to support. And it's very interesting to me that you, like, yeah, like that it's passed down this idea that it's risky to stand, which it is, right? Like you said, you're putting yourself out there. People need, anybody can comment on things. Anybody can share that instead of just like head down, let's get work done. Oh, they're quiet. They get their stuff done. Yeah, that's an interesting, that's a, man, that's a really interesting culture thing too, I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you have a podcast, so you probably know it more than anyone. You hear your voice out there every episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's sort of like that balance between I'm putting myself out there and, you know, there's always a bit of risk and, you know, challenges that come with that. But there's also so much to gain from hearing other people's stories, which you facilitate with your podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks. The thing I've noticed that I went through, and I'd like to hear your, not even struggle with it, but challenge with it. Because I moved from Sudbury out of town for school for like post-secondary. So I moved to Ottawa from Sudbury, and I'm curious, how was that transition process like for you? Like the moving itself, like when did you decide, okay, this is where I'm going? Because McMaster, right?
Yeah.
So how'd you decide, okay, McMaster it is, I'm going to leave and move now. And then I'm also going to like kind of come back and help, like stuff like that. Like how did you decide where to go and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think for me, it wasn't, it was a hard choice for some reasons, but at the same time, it was a bit of an easy choice. My dad works at Laurentian. So for me, that was my sign to get the hell out, respectfully to my dad, but I didn't really want to have him as my prof. So I always knew that I wanted to leave. The decision sort of wavered where I wanted to go. The program that I'm in right now, McMaster Health Sciences, is a program that I really wanted to get into early on in high school. They have sort of a different learning approach where it's very inquiry-based. Students take on a lot of their own learning. It's a lot less lecture style and a lot more you do your own research and inquiry and group work. So it develops a lot of life skills along with the academic side of things. But I also wanted to go to Western for their medical science program, and I had gotten a full ride scholarship there. So it was a difficult decision choosing between, you know, learning the same thing, really. They're similar programs, but one of them is one that I really wanted to go to. And then one of them came without any financial barriers.
Yeah.
I think I ended up, you know,
tough
thinking about what I want to do with my career. I ended up choosing health sciences because the program would allow me more time to explore my other interests. And, you know, there's also other grants and scholarships available to fund my education throughout the way. So that's how I ended up with that decision. It was definitely a very difficult one, especially in high school. I feel like a lot of times we're just rushed into a decision. And a lot of people struggle, you know, doing that. And instead of taking like a gap year, they'll force themselves into something, realize they don't like it, go back home for a year, and tack on a couple of extra years trying to figure things out, which is completely fine. But I think the emphasis should be that like taking a gap year or 13th year should be more normalized. Even for students who are like ready to graduate, have the grades, it really doesn't hurt to, you know, just live in your youth for a little bit longer.
Yeah. But make a bit of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, work.
In the end, I think I'm pretty happy with my decision. I like my time here at Mac. I've gotten involved with like healthcare stuff and also policy stuff. And so far I'm liking it. I still have 2 years left, so we'll see how that goes.
You're in second year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Okay, right on. Yeah, you're in what, second semester, second year? I'm trying to remember how it feels
almost
like a while.
Exactly halfway through. Almost.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, right on. So you just touched on it and I'm curious. So when I was you touched on grants, and I think why it's important to bring up grants and bursaries. It's because I've had this discussion with Rafi, actually. Shout out to her. And her and I've had this discussion a few times about I remember graduating, sitting in like Cambrian College, instead of hearing everybody go through, and then people they're getting awards for like the most amount of volunteer hours, and there was a bursary for this or reward for that. And I was like, this doesn't seem to be like something I knew. I was like, I feel if a lot of people knew more about this, there'd be a lot less like financial issues with people. And I was fortunate enough to like have worked a lot in grade 11, 12 and stuff like that, and didn't have to take out any major loans. And I applied to a couple of grants because my folks kind of knew a few things about it. But for the people that don't, and they have to take out these thousands of dollars worth of loans and stuff like that, where could somebody start looking for grants and bursaries and stuff like that they could just be awarded for writing an essay or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that people don't know about. I've heard stats of like hundreds of scholarships going unclaimed because no one really knows about them, no one applies, or the people who apply aren't eligible. One place to start if you're graduating high school and you're applying, it's that normally during the same time that you apply for universities, all universities have specific scholarships that they offer for students who are currently applying at the same time. So for Western, it's a pretty long application. I remember you had to do like a couple of essays. You have to include your grades, and there's also like an interview process. But those are structured into their application process. So while you're applying for university, you should also look into that university to see if they have scholarships, that are given away by the actual institution. And those can go up to, a full ride. I think I've gotten more than $55,000, which would cover your 4 years as well as residence. And a lot of students don't know about them. So
Come
it's a lot
on.
of money to go unnoticed. So students should look into institutions. That's the first step. And then a lot of external organizations, companies, corporations, they also give out money. So I'm sure like McDonald's and Apple, Microsoft, a lot of American companies, they give out scholarships typically to American students. But you can look into, like, let's say you work at Science North, they give a $500 bursary to a graduate. Or a couple graduates every year, I think. I had worked there for my last for 4 years of high school, all through 4 years of high school, actually. So look into the places that you work, ask them if they give any aid for school. You can also do a lot of Google searches like Ontario Student Scholarships. There's a couple of strong websites that have just lists and lists of them. And then once you actually get into university, the scholarships don't really stop. You can look into your institution, they have ongoing scholarship opportunities. And there's also scholarships from external organizations that are awarded to, second years, third years, people going into grad school even. So I feel like those are the avenues I know of for scholarships. There's also like research grants, which is a whole other thing. Something I've learned of recently is that taking out loans, especially from OSAP, is actually a good financial decision if you play it the right way. A lot of people, they qualify for loans but not grants from OSAP, which is the Ontario Undergraduate like Student Assistance Program, I think. A lot of people realize that they don't qualify for any grants, but they qualify for, let's say, $4,000 in loans, and they choose not to take the loan because they do have to repay it. But I've also heard recently of a lot of peers who will take out the loan and invest it. And when it comes time to repaying it, they'll repay the amount that they took out, but then they've already made money based on the investment. So in like a 6% savings account, a high interest savings account, you'll have made it back 6% of $4,000 that you get to keep, just from taking out a loan because it's no interest until you graduate, I think.
Oh yeah, and then once you graduate, it's then they tack
Yeah,
on
within the
the
year you graduate, I think you have to start paying it back. If you go to grad school, that's another 4 years or however many years before you have to repay it. But either way, like these are all opportunities that you don't learn about when you graduate. No one's
No.
really there telling you, coaching you through it. Even things with like credit cards, and I have my money in a no-fee checking account at 0% interest. Recently, I found out that I should take that out and put it into a high-interest savings account so I can earn 6% on any money I have in the bank. So there's just so many things like, investing, opening the right accounts. No one's really there to guide you through it. There really should be someone, but you really have to like grasp at straws to figure things out slowly.
Yeah. Where'd you learn that? Like with like moving it around and stuff like that.
Well, one, my sister is an investment
That's
banker,
exactly what I was gonna think. Yeah.
but it was actually recently with the conversation. I work with the McMaster Students Union, so there's a couple of staff who are here full time who aren't students. And one of them is really knowledgeable in like finances. He had walked us through like the different options. Like EQ Bank has a 4% high interest savings. Wealthsimple, I think, also has a 4%. And then, he was very knowledgeable, and he told us a bit about, like what students typically struggle with or don't know about, and what avenues to maximize your money. So one, you can pay your tuition and rent, but also have that money left over so that you could live once you graduate.
Amazing. Yeah, especially that time in between where you don't know where you're living and don't and like you're waiting for, to get heard back from jobs and stuff like that that you've applied to. Wow, that's yeah, and I think you touched on it too, specifically with not even so much people not giving or knowing the right, it's not knowing, right? And I think that's the biggest thing. And until you do, it's a lot of discovering. I think just people got to get on Google, talk to the right people. And it's not even so much going, hey, what could I do about this? But asking people in the school space, like you said, as resources and stuff like that, like asking the right people. I found too, the biggest thing is I'll never ask for advice from somebody if they're not doing or succeeding in the avenue that I want to succeed in. Right. So you,
Yeah, that's
I'm not
really
gonna ask my
solid advice.
parent. Yeah, right. Like I'm not gonna ask my parents about real estate investing. They just don't do that. So it's like, oh guys, so, well, you wanna do it. I'm like, you gotta be selective about that and stuff like that. So as long until unless they're doing it at a level that I admire or I want to achieve, then yeah, it's finished. So that's cool though that you guys have those resources and that people were able to share that with you. That's wild, especially at like younger in your like education career. Like that's phenomenal. You're only going
Yeah,
to
it's
pass that
definitely,
down.
yeah, it's a place of privilege to be able to learn these sort of things and like
Yeah.
have, a sister who's knowledgeable or be in like a community where people have that those tidbits of information. I think it's really disadvantage to the students who, are struggling financially and also don't have the resources to know how to tackle those financial barriers. So I think that's one of the major challenges, but hopefully like that awareness around like responsible spending and like financial strategies will start going out there. Because the worst thing is when it becomes a barrier and it prevents someone from going to school when they want to.
Right. Interesting. So if we fast forward a bit, how did you get involved in specifically the Redefining Success campaign? Because I want to touch back on Future North, because that's also how we got connected. But then also I appreciate the crap out of what they're doing and have a good understanding of it. And I really like Camilla and Rafi and Jaleese and stuff like that. Like they're on the ball with their projects that they want to do. And they're like soaking up all the information to make it the best as possible. And then they like hit the ground running on things. It's yeah, it's phenomenal. So how'd you get started in that campaign specifically?
Yeah, for sure. They're definitely a small but mighty team. And I mentioned that I worked with Future North through high school on the Culture of the North campaign. And then directly after that campaign, I remember they said, oh, we're doing this thing called like a Hope campaign. We just want to like get a couple of BIPOC youth, do a photo shoot in cultural wear, and then just share what like cultural diversity looks like to
Yeah.
youth in Sudbury. So, we had billboards up, we had stickers and magazines. And it was to promote like a sense of hope in our community after COVID, but also share, that cultural representation within our city. Sort of just got pulled into that one. And then every campaign after that just got pulled into that as well, with their expert panel, which is completely made up of youth. Myself, as well as my friend Hamada, we now chair that panel. So we sort of bring youth on and we sort of guide them in any decisions that the community wants us to make, helping out Future North with campaigns. And then recently over the summer, I was back home visiting and Rafi had asked me, we're doing this Redefining Success campaign. Let me tell you about it. You could also be a speaker if you wanted to. So I do have like an inability to say no, but when it's Future North, I never want to say no anyways. So I'm like, yeah, of course, just tell me what we have to do. I used to work at Science North, so they said, maybe that's a good connection for you to make to go talk in the Science Tavern, along with Caitlin Cotilla, who's also a youth who's doing really incredible things. So shout out to her as well. So I came home for a weekend. I did my Redefining Success campaign speech. Caitlin did hers, and it was a really great event to go out to. It feels a bit weird talking about success to people who like are more successful than me and who are a lot older and more accomplished and like wise. But it was nice to hear stories, from Caitlin and myself, but also from people who had came of how like where they got where they were, and sort of just sharing those perspectives.
When you say the people were more like wise and stuff like that and successful in your words, what, like, how old were the, like, was the audience, or were you talking specifically like the people with you doing it also part of it?
I would say the audience is definitely catered towards youth. I was thinking more about my
Yeah.
parents because I
Oh, they showed
never invite
up?
my parents. Yeah, I hardly invite them to things.
Oh,
I find it
I
such
didn't
a
invite mine.
weird thing to have like my parents watch me like speak or like be in my element. But because I was only there in Sudbury for, I don't know, like less than 12 hours probably, and I don't see them very often because of how far we are. We had also got stuck in traffic on the way there, so we didn't get to have lunch or dinner with them. They had sealed off the city because of a bad crash, so we got there
Right.
just in time, and I didn't want them to like be able to spend time with me. And I know as parents, it's probably hard when you have a daughter who's so like, stay away from my life. So I think for me, it was nice to have them there and, you know, have them hear me talk and then be able to talk to them about it after as well.
I think that's the bravest thing I've ever heard somebody say. It's like, yeah, I was
Yeah.
open and vulnerable and had my decided to invite my parents. But I, yeah, in
Definitely not
that
an
case.
everyday thing.
Fair enough. Oh man, that's amazing. Did you what was when you moved, how was like the adjustment from living, I imagine, like with your sister or maybe like just with your parents, like how was that adjustment for you?
Yeah, I always thought I'd be someone who would do well in like a university environment. I'm like, I don't need my parents, I don't need my sister. Every summer in high school, I'd go out to do like a leadership program or go to science fair for a couple like a week or two in a different city. And I've always been fine, you know, like I'm a pretty independent person. But I found that when I went to university, I was actually really sad and I missed Sudbury a lot, which is something I didn't expect. You know, like in my time in high school, a lot of times I would find Sudbury boring. There's not a lot of things to do for young people.
You're
But I found
right.
myself missing it a lot once I went
Yeah.
to university. You know, we don't have like that greenery, that nature, like that serenity that Sudbury has. And I also miss my mom and dad, which is something I
Yeah.
wasn't expecting. And I think a lot of youth, they go to university expecting they're going to be fine. And then they're really caught off guard when they're not exactly fine all the time. And I think that's okay. It's something that you should talk about. You should schedule time to call your mom and dad every week.
Yeah.
And really try. I think something that really helped me was just find different groups and students to connect with, and those people slowly become your family as well. It's not that
Yeah.
it takes away from your own family back home, but you feel a sense of belonging in a new place. And I just like, even if you're a great student, you do well academically and you get involved in things, don't be too surprised if you find yourself really sad. It's definitely like a big step. You feel like you're growing up a lot when you have to go out to a new city, live by yourself. And losing a lot of that like childhood innocence and like dependence on your parents, you start suddenly have to cook for yourself and like do garbage on Sundays. It's insanity, but you know, it's things do get better. It's just a bit of like an adjustment transition period.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone has a transition period, no matter how like ready or independent you are. And that's something that people don't always like clock in, that like everyone's gonna have a bit of a challenge moving to a new place or going to university.
Yeah, no, I completely agree in terms of like the looking around, trying to find people that you can connect with and they become your, like, you know, your friends and then escalate to your family and stuff like that. And I think unintentionally, I was like, I would text my folks every now and then. I think I remember it being, I remember being like, you know, saying goodbye to my brother and my mom when they dropped me off at like the front door residence and they were leaving. And I remember going back upstairs and being like, huh. Well, this is it, eh? It was like it was very
Yeah.
anticlimactic, where I was like, oh, when's it gonna hit me? And then it was just like, oh, it's not supposed to. It's just they're just gone now. I'm like, whoa, this is what being on your own feels like. This
Yeah.
is freaky. It was cool,
It's
right?
cool, freaky, it's like exciting. And then there's also a bit like of a pit where like, oh, I guess I won't see my parents for a while now. I just remembered that when they dropped me off in residence, actually, my mom said, like, oh, there's a couple of things we need to pick up from Dollarama for you. So her and my sister and my dad, they went to go to Dollarama. And then they never came back. My mom just texted me saying, you know, like, actually, we decided to go home. And I remember at the time being really upset because my roommate,
What?
who was also moving in, her parents were like bawling on the floor. Like they seemed really upset by the fact that they're dropping their daughter off, even though they lived like an hour away. And then my parents had, you know, gone to Dollarama and they didn't really come back. And for the longest time, I was so upset because I'm like, you guys like not love me? Or And eventually I found out from my sister, it was actually just because my mom, she didn't want to have like the whole I cry, you cry, and then we like leave you really sad in your residence.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the end, I think it was an act of love, but at the time it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I was like, Mom, I'm not gonna cry, but now I'm mad
Yeah,
at
now I'm
you.
just mad.
Yeah, it's like, oh man, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, just well, without knowing the behind the scenes, like, you know, she did it with an act of love and stuff, and you got
Oh.
upset, and then it worked itself out, obviously, as it would. But man, that's hilarious.
Yeah, definitely not what
Ah,
I was expecting.
yeah, we'll be back. And they just never came back. It's like, yeah, the dog's got to go to the farm. And then it's like, just there's no farm. Oh
Yeah.
man, that's amazing. Wow.
A great memory.
Yeah, that's better than, yeah, that's better than mine. Mine was kind of awkward, right? Like, it's my brother doesn't, there's no emotion. There was no like emotional thing with us. It was kind of like, I think one of us quoted a movie, and then the other's like, we wanted to cry, but didn't know how to do it.
There you
Right? Like,
probably.
right? He was a couple years younger than me. I was 18 or just 17. So I was like, what's going on here? And then like my mom was crying, but then I'm like, there's people walking in and out of res right in the
Yeah.
front. So I'm like, it's just, I'm like embarrassed, but also like sad, but like just unsure of how to handle the emotions I was facing at the time. And then just remember looking around and like, oh yeah, this is it. Like I said, like, oh man, this is where we're at, eh? Whew.
Yeah, it's a
But
big moment in life. You always remember it.
yeah, it's a bit messed up, but you know, I think it's
Yeah.
very important. I think people should have it. But what I'm curious about that with you, would you recommend, just from your experience, that I'm sure seeing friends that have, you know, gone, and you've met people who've maybe stayed in the city that they're going to school in and stuff like that, or people like who've only traveled certain distance, that's might be a bit like they could go home on weekends and stuff like that, like those people as well. Would you recommend, if you had to recommend one or the other, okay, would you recommend somebody either stay in town for school or go out of town for school?
I think that's a tough question because
Yeah.
it's so unique to each person. I think for me, if I had to pick like for myself what would have been better, I think I did make the right decision leaving. Like no matter how independent you think you are, like this is a totally new experience having to live on your own and like having to figure out how to live with like housemates that you might not necessarily get along with, or like cook your own meals and like survive. Maybe not survive, that's a bit extreme, but you know, like figure out life on your own. That's
Yeah.
something I feel like I needed. My parents have always been like very supportive, cut me up fruit before I go to sleep, you know,
Oh,
and I don't,
nice.
sometimes you can grow into that sort of dependence and forget how to, you know, one day you are gonna have to live on your own. So for me, that was important. I really enjoy having like my independence, but I also see on the other side, like staying at home financially, a really great decision. You don't have to pay rent. You might even get like your parents' car. Tuition is probably a bit cheaper, especially if you have a family member that works at the university. So I definitely wouldn't discourage one or the other. You know, like people are at different stages of their life. Some people are comfortable and ready to move away, and some people need an extra year. There's always the option you do 2 years at Laurentian and then you transfer to another school when you realize you're ready for something new or like a new environment. But for me, I think like one of the big things moving down here is also that there's so much more diversity. There's so much more things to do, things that I want to explore as I'm like in this period of my life. And then eventually, like, I'm very open and like, I actually do want to move back to Northern Ontario to Sudbury once I want to settle down and, you know, work because I think those are communities that need more, let's say, healthcare workers or advocates.
Yeah, definitely
But
both.
at this point in my life, when I'm doing like that transition into adulthood and like moving out of youth, I think this was the right move for me. But I'm not going to say it's the right move for everyone.
Right. And I think too, what's cool that I found out, and maybe not in a good way, but I can't be on my parents' insurance if I'm a student that's also living at their house. So I
Oh.
don't qualify, whereas I would qualify and be on their insurance. Like, I don't know, I can't remember if it was car or whatever it is, at like out of town. If I was studying in school, I would be able to qualify to be on their insurance and be under it, whereas I wouldn't if I'm living with them. It was weird.
Yeah, that's weird. That's an interesting like clause.
Yeah, it was something, I don't know what it, I can't remember if it was a house insurance or car insurance. I think it was along the lines of like my girlfriend was getting a new car, and we were talking about the insurance of it. And I think it was like, because she's a student, but her address is in the city that she's going to school in, it wouldn't qualify her for a certain premium. But if she was, because that same issue I had when I lived in Ottawa, but I was able to get the insurance. So I was like, I was talking to my dad about it. And then he was like, oh, well, actually you should be able to get this because she's going to school. And I present that to her and it's like, well, actually, because it's this, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So I can't remember exactly the quite like the minutia. Yeah. But it was weird. Right. So I was like, I don't know about this. So there's definitely benefit, but then there's also ways that they get you.
Yeah.
It throws me off. But with that being said, where do you think, just because I really want to ask you this question, I'm curious. It's kind of unrelated to what we were just talking about, but where's the coolest place you think you've traveled? Like, coolest for you or visited? Or it could be favorite too.
I'm struggling between two options. So recently, like I think a year or two ago, we spent the summer, we went a couple of weeks to France. Definitely like a bucket list item, like would encourage anyone who's thinking of traveling and is considering France. It's such a nice place to go in terms of like in Paris, especially like the infrastructure is just set up so that it's very like tourist friendly, but also like just people living friendly, like a lot of walkways and trails.
Yeah.
Compared to if you go to Toronto, like there's a lot of roads and it's not very like city traveling tourist friendly. But I think the coolest place I'd probably say is still China. I wasn't born there, but you know, obviously my parents come from there. So we go to visit family often enough before COVID. After COVID has been really difficult. So we haven't been back in a while. I think it's just like there's the culture shock. Obviously, when you go, everything's a lot different. There's like a hustle bustle culture in the big cities, and then the rural towns are a lot less developed, but almost in a good way. My grandparents are from like a village with like 1,000 people on the tip of a mountain, 3 hours away from like anything major. Being able to sort of see like a different way of life is really interesting. You see people are like very happy and they live very long, happy lives without that stimulation that we have in our world, like no electronics.
Really?
Difference? It is a huge, huge difference. I would say like heating and like AC is relatively new within the past couple of decades. So the way of living is a lot simpler, I would say. They don't need a lot of that like luxurious. There isn't like a need for luxurious things. And that lets people live like happier lives. There's also like that sense of community economy. Like a lot of people there are farmers. They have land near their homes. So, you know, I'll provide you grains of rice and then I get corn from you. And less of that dependency on like capitalism where we pay for everything and it makes us broke and then we have to struggle about money. They don't get to worry about, you know, family and friends and that sort of thing because they don't need to worry about those like other logistical, financial, you know, those sort of aspects of life that we have to worry about here.
What do you think that you've noticed is the biggest difference? Because you just named off a few, but what would you think, maybe not biggest difference, because you named a couple of them, but I think different question or better question for that would be like, what's something that you noticed that was the most surprising difference? Because you were old enough to like understand the difference between two, eh? Like you weren't four when you were last there, right? So
I think maybe the most surprising or the most important thing I noticed is that people are very happy in those areas, like in the villages where my grandparents are from. And sometimes you don't expect, we look down on people who don't have the same access to things as we do. You know, we look down on people in third world countries often, like we assume that their quality of life is very poor. And by association, we also assume that they're unhappy. And I think that's not very fair to them, you know, the village, that lack of access to things is almost a good thing, where they get to like stay rooted in their values and the culture. And it's the same thing if we think about like taking land from the Indigenous peoples in Canada. We take that land away from them, we take away that connection to land, and in return we get a lot of burdensome things that we don't always realize because we live in a world where we always we work towards more things, we work towards more money. And I'm not gonna shit on our whole culture and like
what is not.
Median. I think it's just that like it's something that you should definitely experience, is going to a place where they have a completely different way of life. And sort of realizing that like there are things that we can change in our lifestyle that they're benefiting from. And obviously there's things in their lifestyle that they could benefit from learning other cultures as well. But it was just something surprising to know, like we see like, oh, these people are doing so poorly without access to all these things, they're going to struggle. And then going to those places and seeing that they're very happy people, they live long lives, and they have such good connections with each other.
If you were to change one thing or take one thing and put it to the other and take one thing from like maybe here in Canada and apply it there, what do you think you would do?
What I want to take from there is definitely that sense of like community
It
that I
is,
think we
yeah.
might have lost. The pandemic definitely made it much, much worse. But like even that sense of like having neighbors and like knocking on doors, having like neighborhood barbecues, getting to know the people who live beside you and across from you is something that I think is important. Like even going to go borrow sugar from your neighbor, like that's not really a heard of concept anymore. I remember as a kid,
Oh
I
God,
used
no,
to have sugar with my neighborhood friend. We'd always exchange anything that we needed. So that sense of like having a community, it really like isolated us during the pandemic, and we haven't really built that back up. So I think that's something we can learn from communities that really rely on each
Interesting.
other instead of having to rely on, like what the government tells us. Now I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I'd say like instead of relying on,
But you're
like
not
what we
wrong,
receive
though.
digitally, what we receive like from news cycles or, being
Yeah,
on our phones all day, just saying that
mainstream
connect with each
media.
other. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, interesting. I definitely agree with you, especially the like the form of connection, and that was something in the pandemic and the stuff that we were, I guess, fed in terms of there was just too much information and there was too much going around, so we got to see the side effects of being connected to everything and everyone all the time. So we got to see the extreme side of the, like there's this going on and there's, and you don't know what to believe anymore now that we're on the outside of it. So we kind of just have to take with it and like, apply it to whether it affects our lives or what we're doing or not. And I think the best thing too with that I found, and I love the sense of community, the sense of connection. I tried to forge that even more during the pandemic. It was like, okay, I gotta go on like an Instagram live once a day with my like a friend of mine. And stuff like that, and then try to bring people in, and then people are like, oh, I'll get involved this way, and then oh, I'll get involved that way. And then I think what really helped too was like the podcast for me personally helped a lot during that time with the oh, we're missing connection, we're missing community, and then I was able to like, everybody was inside, so a lot more people had time to do it than I expected, right? At least in the beginning portion of it. And then once kind of everything started to relax itself and play itself out and everything, coming back to normal, then everything seemed to, depending on who you are, people are still a bit timid. I think it's more older folk, but younger people as well. So maybe like teens and youth, but not so much like young adults and into people in their 30s and stuff. I think those people are still like, they know how they like to live. And they're like, I have people I can name off now, probably that like they go and borrow sugar. And they're in their 30s, 40s, and they go borrow sugar from their neighbor four doors down, or all the kids play on the street and they kind of like put their trucks at the end of the roads on their streets in New Sudbury that prevent people from going on their street
And I
so
think that's
that
such
they
a
can
great
like.
way to, like a great way to grow up, like seeing your parents interact with your neighbors, getting to know the neighborhood kids. And I think for me, I grew up back in Thunder Bay. The neighborhood I grew up in was very like diverse in terms of socioeconomic status. So
Oh, cool.
the neighbor next to me might have a really nice house, and the neighbor next to me on the other side might have a smaller house. But all of our, like we all played together in the same backyard and learned what it was like to have different life experiences.
Interesting.
I think one of the things today is that like in areas like Markham and Toronto, all the houses look like they've been like cookie cutted into the same shape, and it
Exact
breeds
same.
like a lot of competition between families. Because you all have the same background, you all have the same economic status, and then it becomes a competition of like then who's going to raise the child or who's going to have the most money. And I think having that diverse perspective is definitely useful, valuable, I would say actually. So you get to know like what it's like to live a different life and connect with people who have different life experiences. And that's something I think we might be moving away from as we like develop our cities.
And I think that's something that's cool about what you're doing, especially with BIPOC and youth, is having that information available and those references and examples of cultural people that are, hey, we're doing these things, and now you are able to see how other people do it and you go to school or you go in these communities and you're able to showcase kind of, hey, this is a different way of doing things than the way you're being shown, like you and your neighbors who are all just like one version. There's four of you and it's you versus everybody to your right and you versus everybody to your left. So it's really cool to see like what you guys are doing and letting that kind of broaden everybody else's perspective and horizons. I think that's super important. So it's really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's awesome. So with that being said, kind of to wrap up, do you have, before I conclude, you've touched on a bunch of different things in terms of like advice or knowledgeable or topics that I think people can take away from and actually apply to their own lives, which I'm grateful for, Carrie. The one thing I would like to ask is if you have a piece of advice or wisdom or like a nugget or something that you've received over the years that's kind of stood the test of time that you would apply to or you would give to somebody that can apply it to their life. It could even be a reiteration of everything you've already said. So
yeah, in my Redefining Success campaign spiel, I had like this quote I remember I talked about, and it's, what was it? What was the exact phrasing? It was, I think it's something on the lines of like, everyone is living life for the first time.
Mm.
It's not really a piece of advice. It's more of something to like live by. I remember I saw it when I was in school, and it was a time when I was just like really frustrated with the world and like, why does racism exist? Like, why do we have so much stigma? And like just getting into that rabbit hole of everything sucks. Tough. And you know, I was angry at my parents and why don't they want me to be an advocate? Like, why don't they want to share stories? And you know, like unfair resentment going everywhere in every direction. And I saw that quote on like some sort of reel on Instagram, and it really grounded me right away to realize that, you know, for one, my parents, they're living life for the first time. You know, like they did something monumental by going across the country to try to build a better life for me and my sister. And it's not my place to, you know, like try and blame them for something they're trying to do out of love. They're living life for the first time. The people who are perpetuating hate, the people who are racist, they could be part of their learning journey where they're starting to learn something new and grow and be better. So they're also living life for the first time. And, you know, having that grace for yourself as well to know when you make a mistake, that's because you're also living life for the first time, and realizing that everyone around you, you know, no one has done this before. We're all just trying to figure our shit out. And I think that creates a lot of empathy for yourself and people around you. And it lets you have a bit of peace of mind in terms of the world does not suck. Mm-hmm. It's just people are trying to figure things out. And people who have different life experiences and perspectives. And it's a good way of grounding yourself, especially if you work in the world of advocacy, if you're in a period where you're really frustrated with life, if you're in a transition period and you're meeting a lot of new people. I think it's something that I always want to share with other people too, which is why I said it in my Redefining Success campaign. But it's something I'd like, you don't really, it's not like a cliche phrase or anything. I feel like it should now.
Yeah.
But definitely something I feel like is valuable to like think about sometimes, especially when you're in a darker place.
I love that. That's really cool. It's a good way to sum up everything we've kind of talked about. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to roll out the red carpet for you. Tell us what should we follow? Where can we hear from you, see more of you, connect, where can people connect with you or reach out, stuff like that, if need be? Where's the best place to see what you're getting involved with and stuff like that? So yeah, shout out your stuff. Now's your time.
Sounds good. Well, my Instagram is at Carrie Yang. So it's just KerryYYYang. Probably the best place to reach me if anyone's listening to this and wants to like chat about anything, like you were thinking about like where to get scholarships, or you want to know like what the transition is like, or about going to McMaster, anything really, you can always shoot me a message over my Instagram. Or my email, which is just my first and last name at icloud.com. I think that's all the plug I have, but I'm very open to like receiving messages if anyone has any questions or things like that.
Nice. Carrie, I've learned quite a few things talking to you today. So I'm really grateful for your time. And I'm happy we were able to connect today. So thanks very much for doing this.
Thanks for your time, Glenn.
Awesome.